Folks, what did you think about the Bible reading? What did you think about the story? What did you think about when Steve was reading out those the story of Ruth and Boaz and Naomi and Boaz and the kinsmen? It sounds like it's got the makings of a Hollywood movie, don't you think? Like, I don't know how many of you are into Pride and Prejudice and, you know, Jane Austen and all those sorts of things. I must profess ignorance. But it takes a bit of keeping up. Here's a scheming mother-in-law who tries to set up a daughter-in-law with a wealthy bachelor. All right, this story here has got a romantic midnight rendezvous as Ruth sneaks into the threshing floor to surprise Boaz. It's got this high-stakes property deal between our hero Boaz and a potential rival. It's a story that's full of mystery and romance and drama, don't you think? But rather than just a romantic story, we've been seeing that in the book of Ruth, there's actually a bigger story going on. And that's Yahweh, God, the God of the Old Testament, our God, his chesed for his people. If you missed the last couple of weeks, this is this special word in Hebrew which expresses all of those things that God is and his people are to be. Steadfast love, loving kindness, covenantal loyalty. We saw last week, Yahweh's love is sovereign. He is completely in control in his loving kindness and his graciousness, acting through a series of fortunate events that brought this man Boaz onto the scene. This week, we see Yahweh's love act, that sovereign love act to redeem his people. So what does it mean? What does it mean to redeem? What's this word redemption all about? Well, the simplest analogy is in a person. It's in a person called Matt White. It's what he does as a job for the government. You see, Matt works for a government department that chases after people's outstanding fines. So if you've been a naughty boy or naughty girl this year, racking up speeding tickets or parking fines or both, all right, and your fines are overdue, Matt comes after you. Sorry, go back there. Matt comes after you and either clamps your car wheel or forcibly possesses it, tows it away, until you pay your fines and redeem your car. Redemption, then, is paying the price to set something or someone free. It's an act that usually costs the redeemer. He's the one that's got to pay the money. He's the one that's got to put himself out to do it. And that is what we see Boaz doing for Ruth and Naomi today, at great personal cost. He will set Naomi and Ruth free from a life of poverty, and we'll see that's what Yahweh ultimately does for us. Not set us from poverty, merely poverty, but from something even greater, out of his great loving kindness, out of his great chesed. But first, in the story we've just heard, it begins with everybody making plans. So point one on your outline, everyone's making plans. Let's start from verse 1 of chapter 3. One day, Ruth's mother-in-law Naomi said to her, "My daughter, I must find a home for you, where you will be well provided for. Now Boaz, with whose women you have worked, is a relative of ours. Tonight he will be winnowing barley on the threshing floor. Wash, put on perfume, get dressed in your best clothes, we might say get dolled up, all right? Then go down to the threshing floor, but don't let him know that you are there until he has finished eating and drinking. When he lies down, note the place where he's lying, then go and uncover his feet and lie down. He will tell you what to do." What on earth is Naomi up to? Well, notice that rather than being angry, first thing that we need to see is that far from being resentful and self-absorbed in her bitterness like she was at the end of chapter 1, Naomi's actually thinking of Ruth here. How can she help Ruth out of the dire and shameful situation, remembering that last week they've essentially had to beg, all right? Boaz has provided for them really generously, but essentially what they're doing is begging in order to survive. How can she help Ruth out of that situation? Well, things look promising between Ruth and Boaz. There seemed to be chemistry between them last week in the last chapter as they admired each other's character. Ruth, for Boaz's overwhelming and extravagant generosity to her, a foreigner and a widow, we saw that last week, and Boaz, who has heard all about Ruth's loyalty, literally her chesed to Naomi, forsaking her own people, the Moabites, and forsaking her own gods to stick with Naomi and stick with Yahweh. Things looked good, didn't they, last week? But it's been some months that the whole harvest is coming to an end. It takes somewhere between 6 to 12 weeks. And Boaz hasn't made any moves yet. So Naomi devises this plan. Essentially, it's for Boaz to take a hint, to propose to Ruth, who has given up everything. I think we can see quite clearly here, for Naomi. But let me just explain very quickly how silly this idea really is, how improbable this plan looks. Because Ruth runs the risk of a really major misunderstanding that could ruin everything. It's got to do with the timing. You see, we're in the barley and wheat harvest season. All right, ancient harvests were very, very labor intensive. If it's a bumper crop particularly, and it sounds like this one is, from the mention of the piles of grain there in verse 7, then a lot of the able-bodied men of the town of Bethlehem will be involved with cutting and threshing the wheat and the barley at the threshing floor. It's a rocky place in the field somewhere outside the city. So these guys would come out of the city to do the work. All right, they would thresh, they would cut and thresh, and they would get paid as well in grain, in what they're actually working for. But they would be required to sleep out in the fields right there at the threshing floor to guard it so that someone doesn't kind of make off with the fruit of their labors. So just imagine, all right, use your imagination. See a bunch of a crowd of tired men after a long day's work, hungry and thirsty, but cashed up, all right, ready to let their hair down. It's just like the way that mining towns in our mining boom, with a population of cashed up young men, attract, amongst many other things, prostitution. And Naomi wants to send Ruth there to the threshing floor in those dodgy circumstances in the middle of the night? Ruth's in great danger of having her reputation destroyed if just one person should see her and recognize her. I think you'll agree that this is not the smartest idea. And even if she manages to confront Boaz in the middle of the night, to get that one-to-one conversation with her, at that point there's still several ways the plan can still go wrong. Boaz might himself mistaken her for a common prostitute and welcome her advances. Now, we know this is not likely because he's shown himself to be a godly man so far, even though he's single. But even so, if he was godly and refused, he might then just shoo her away, preferring not to be caught in a compromising position because he himself, remember, was a man of standing. Either of those outcomes will spell failure for Naomi's plan. And who knows what would happen next? Boaz may very well just kick her out of the field, kick Ruth out of her field, and they'd be back to square one. So it's not really a terribly good plan. But for some reason, Ruth goes along with it. Even though she's not told the details, remember, she's just told to just be there and Boaz is going to tell her what to do next. She's a little bit too trusting, isn't she? Well, and in the end, will Boaz recognize what's going on and react the right way? Well, let's keep reading. So verse 5, Ruth says, "I will do whatever you say." Verse 6, "So she went down to the threshing floor and did everything her mother-in-law told her to do. When Boaz had finished eating and drinking and was in good spirits, he went over to lie down at the far end of the grain pile. Ruth approached quietly, uncovered his feet, and lay down." Now, I just want to say that this is out in the middle of the field. This is the desert. Okay, it gets really, really, really cold. If you've ever camped on the other side of the Great Dividing Range in September and October under the stars, right, even though it's spring, it gets really, really, really cold. So what Naomi does is uncover, take the blanket off Boaz's feet, all right, so he will wake up in the middle of the night. As everyone knows what happens when your spouse steals the blankets from you. That's what happens. Okay, verse 8, in the middle of the night, it's not quite something startled the man. That's not a great translation. He woke up with a start, is probably a better translation. Boaz turned, and there was a woman lying at his feet. So he wakes up because he is shivering with the cold. He turns around and he asks, verse 9, "Who are you?" "I am your servant Ruth," she said. "Spread the corner of your garment over me, since you are a guardian redeemer of our family." Now, just pause and appreciate how dodgy that situation is. Right? Ruth's asking him to spread the corner of his garment, his blanket, over her. It's actually a Jewish idiom. It's how you ask, or it's what you do when you're in a marriage ceremony. The husband would actually spread a garment over the bride. So the bridegroom would spread the garment over the bride. But this actually is kind of the wrong way around. What Ruth's doing here goes against all the Israelite social customs. Ruth is proposing to Boaz, a woman to a man, a servant girl to the landowner, a foreigner to the native Israelite, a Moabite, no less. But what does Boaz make of it? Could he be thinking Ruth's literally saying, "Come on, move over, share your blanket with me like some Moabite hussy"? What about the improvisation a little bit later on Naomi's plan? See, nowhere in Naomi's plan did Naomi say to Ruth to bring up this idea of a guardian redeemer. But Ruth not only breaks social conventions, she actually demands that Boaz marry her. She's reminding him by bringing that up that he's got to do the right thing because he's the guardian redeemer of the family. See, it turns out Ruth isn't just sweetly and innocently going along with Naomi's somewhat harebrained plan. She's going along with it because Ruth actually has a plan of her own. She recognizes that in this midnight conversation with Boaz, there is a great opportunity for her to invoke this law of God that came from God for guardian redeemers to act to protect members of the wider family who have fallen on hard times, as Naomi obviously has. She's demanding that Boaz marry her, not because she's madly in love with her. Ruth's wanting Boaz to marry her because that's what will secure Naomi's future, by acting as their guardian redeemer of the family. See, Naomi, she started off with a plan to look after Ruth, but Ruth herself has a plan and subverts Naomi's plan in a way so as to look after Naomi. Now, that's all wonderful and sweet, but how will Boaz actually react? Verse 10, "Yahweh bless you, my daughter," he replied. "This kindness, this chesed, is greater than that which you showed earlier. You have not run after the younger men, whether rich or poor." Boaz recognizes that Ruth's actions are selfless, that she's wanting what's good for Naomi rather than herself. See, she could have married for status with the younger men. So younger men is not a great translation again. It's literally the choice men. Okay, it's the eligible bachelors. It's the ones they pick to be on The Bachelor. Okay, never watched the show, but that seems to be the sort of guys that they pick. All right, or Ruth could have been marrying for love with a poor man. Or Ruth could have been marrying for money with a rich man. But no, she married for the sake of her mother-in-law. Her chesed here is even greater now than when she abandoned her own family and her own people to follow Naomi. That's why she is truly a woman of noble character. And just like we saw last week, God is in control. God is sovereign at work in events. God is at work here, isn't he? He's working out his purposes in the plans of Naomi, even though it's not a great plan. He's working out his purposes in the plans of Ruth, as she cleverly bargains for the advantage of Naomi instead of herself. And God is sovereignly at work here in the reaction of Boaz, who, despite a rude midnight awakening, recognizes all that was happening in front of him. And being a man who desires to honor Yahweh, he says in verse 11, "And now, my daughter, don't be afraid. I will do for you all that you ask. All the people of my town know that you are a woman of noble character." Back in chapter 2, verse 12, Boaz commends Ruth for seeking shelter under Yahweh's wings. It's actually the same word that Ruth uses here when she asks Boaz to spread the wings of his blanket over her in marriage. We're meant to see that Boaz, he's the incarnation, he's the agent of Yahweh's loving kindness in providing refuge for Ruth. Ruth trusted that Yahweh is indeed loving and kind, despite not being able to see it in chapter 1. And here, Yahweh delivers on his character. He delivers on it. He vindicates her trust and provides a redeemer for Boaz, for Ruth and Naomi. Naomi had a plan and Ruth had a plan, and we're going to see that Boaz is going to have a plan in a minute. But in all these improbable plans and imperfect human actions, can you see that Yahweh is working out his plans and purposes? In his sovereignty, in his chesed, in his loving kindness, he will provide a redeemer for his people. But like all good stories, it doesn't just finish right there. There's always a snag. Verse 12. Boaz continues to say, "Although it is true that I am a guardian redeemer of our family, there's another who is more closely related than I. Stay here for the night, and in the morning, if he wants to do his duty as your guardian redeemer, good, let him. Let him redeem you. But if he is not willing, as surely as Yahweh lives, I will do it. Lie here until the morning." See, the snag in the plan here has to do with how property and relationships are figured out in ancient Israel. This is kind of a bit tricky for us, okay? So thinking caps on, this is very, very different to how we think about property and people and family. See, in ancient Israel, Yahweh, in his loving kindness, commanded his people to act on special occasions as these guardian redeemers for members of the extended family. So guardian redeemers are people that other people in the extended family can come to, right, can turn to for help, specifically when family property, which as you can see there, are an inheritance that Yahweh has given to specific families. Right. Ideally, they're not to be parceled out or sold outside the family. So when these properties are threatened, the family, the guardian redeemer, is to come and redeem them, buy it back. All right. And here are the laws from Leviticus and Deuteronomy behind that. Or the other place is if the family line itself is threatened through childlessness, others in the family are to step in and to provide an heir. All right, and that one there in Deuteronomy, that is the law that really makes us glad, isn't it? That as Christians, we don't live under those Old Testament laws anymore. But the idea behind it is that Yahweh wants his people to be cared for, even in adverse circumstances, through guardian redeemers. But the specific person who has the rights to be a guardian redeemer, in Ruth and Naomi's case, it came down to a pecking order, and Boaz, though he was close to Elimelech, Naomi's dead husband, there's actually somebody else closer who has the rights to be a guardian redeemer. It's not really the answer we're looking for, is it? We're kind of on the side here. We're kind of waving our pom-poms and cheering for Boaz to be the redeemer. He's the godly bloke with good character. We can trust him to act rightly. But frustratingly, it's precisely because Boaz is determined to do the right thing. This is a guy who doesn't take shortcuts here, that he says there's actually someone else. I'm sorry, as much as I would love to do it, there's someone else who has the rights before me. And he himself has to come up with a plan. So first thing in the morning, Boaz arranges a meeting at the town gate. Chapter 4, and we pick it up from verse 3. He collars the kinsman redeemer, the guardian redeemer that comes along, and then he said to the guardian redeemer, verse 3, "Naomi, who has come back from Moab, is selling the piece of land that belongs to our relative Elimelech. I thought I should bring the matter to your attention and suggest that you buy in the presence of these seated here and in the presence of the elders of my people. If you redeem it, do so. But if you will not, tell me so I will know. For no one has the right to do it except you, and I am next in line. I will redeem it," he said. And our hearts sink, don't they? That's not what he's supposed to say. The person's really keen to redeem it because he wants the extra land. He could do with that. That is until Boaz tells him that if he wants to redeem it, he also has to take Ruth to raise the family line of Elimelech. Verse 5, then Boaz said, on the day you buy the land from Naomi, you also acquire Ruth the Moabite, the dead man's widow, in order to maintain the name of the dead with his property. Notice how clever Boaz kind of holds back that really important piece of information, right, and hits him with it as he gets really excited. And at that point, the guardian redeemer gets cold feet. Verse 6, at this the guardian redeemer said, oh, then I cannot redeem it because I might endanger my own estate. You redeem it yourself. I cannot do it. What's going on? How can this guy be endangering his estate if he does the right thing? Well, you see, it's because redemption is a very costly process. What would have happened was this guy would have bought Elimelech's property, all right, with his own money, but then he would have had to give that property to Elimelech's heir, to the son that he fathers through Ruth, as his inheritance. So effectively, he would have bought all this, right, all the cost of redeeming the property, but it would have been no personal benefit to him or his descendants. Now, this guy wasn't prepared to do that, and you kind of got to understand, don't you? Except that God commanded his people to do this. Back there in Deuteronomy 25, in the verse I flashed up there, further on in that passage, it says, if the guardian redeemer wasn't prepared to provide an heir for a dead relative, that was actually an incredibly shameful thing. In fact, in cases like that, the widow was to go up to the guy who refuses to provide an heir. In the presence of all the elders, she was to spit in his face, and she was to take his sandal off. And from that point on, that family was to be known as the family of the unsandaled, as a reminder of his unwillingness to obey God, to act, to provide for a dead relative. And I think that's at least why the significance of the sandals, if you keep reading on in verse 8, it's really just this guy saying, look, I'd rather have the shame of being known as the unsandaled than to redeem Ruth. It costs too much to give an inheritance to Elimelech's family. But in any case, happily for us, this frees things up for Boaz, isn't it, to redeem Elimelech's property and marry Ruth, which is what he does. All right. It turns out Boaz does do all that he was commanded by God and act as a redeemer. Verse 9, then Boaz announced to the elders and all the people, today you are witnesses that I have bought from Naomi all the property of Elimelech, Chilion, and Mahlon. I have also acquired Ruth, the Moabite, Mahlon's widow, as my wife. Why? In order to maintain the name of the dead, that's Elimelech, with his property, so that his name will not disappear from among his family or from his hometown. Today, you are witnesses. Friends, because of God's loving kindness, he commanded these people to act as guardian redeemers for one another, to provide heirs for those who have died, a command that Boaz obeys. Yahweh comes through in a big way for Ruth and Naomi. Ruth's trust in Yahweh is finally vindicated. Her noble character is recognized. Her desire for Naomi to be cared for is honored by Yahweh. And meanwhile, Naomi, what's happened for her? She's being wooed by Yahweh out of her bitterness to recognize his great and overwhelming loving kindness to her, even continuing her family line, something she didn't dare dream of at the end of chapter 1, through Ruth and Boaz. No longer are they surrounded by death, like at the start of the book. Now that there's new life, they go on from emptiness to fullness. They go from poverty to plenty because of this Redeemer provided by God. It's no wonder the women can say, as we finish up this section, chapter 4, verse 14, they say, the women said to Naomi, praise be to Yahweh, who this day has not left you without a guardian Redeemer. May he become famous throughout Israel. Because of Yahweh's loving kindness, Now, did you hear what the women said? Did you notice where their focus was? It's not Boaz they're praising. They're praising Yahweh, because Yahweh has shown his loving kindness by providing a redeemer. When we come back next week, we'll see that this love story is in the Old Testament. That's actually a story about Yahweh in Israel. because this act of kindness at the end of the book is what brought about the family line of David, Israel's first Messiah, second technically, but Israel's first real Messiah, through a dead man's family line, all because God provided a guardian redeemer in his chesed. A redeemer who was a man sent by God to act on behalf of his brothers, to act for the good of those who was like him in every way. A redeemer who acted in accordance with what God had commanded, one who was righteous and just. A redeemer who didn't balk at the thought that he might endanger his estate, but one who redeemed his brothers at great personal cost. A redeemer who rescued them from a hopeless situation and he brought them out of slavery and shame back into the family. A redeemer who provided them with refuge and safety and security, who provided them with plenty, a blessing of abundance. This redeemer who provided them with an inheritance that they could never have hoped for. A redeemer who, in a sense, brought them from death to life. Now, as I'm saying this, is this reminding you of somebody? Because there's a lot of similarities, isn't there, between this kind of redeemer and Jesus. Because as great a love story as this was between Boaz and Ruth, it actually points to the greatest love story. And that is between Jesus and his people, the church. Because you see, the kind of redeemer that was commanded in the law, the kind of redeemer that was modeled for us by Boaz, it's exactly the kind of redeemer that is fulfilled by Jesus. Jesus is the ultimate guardian redeemer. Jesus is our guardian redeemer. He's our brother, the one we can turn to for help when we're in danger of being lost. How does that work? We'll take a look at Hebrews chapter 2. Since the children have flesh and blood, that's us we're talking about here, he, that is Jesus, too, shared in their humanity, so that by his death he might break the power of him who holds the power of death, that is the devil, and free those who all their lives were held in slavery by their fear of death. See, Jesus shared in our humanity. He was made like us in every way. He felt the same emotions, all of it. He went through all the temptations, yet was without sin. He took on flesh and blood. He went to all that hassle. Why? So he could act as our guardian redeemer. So he could act on our behalf. So he could set us free from fear. So that he could redeem us from sin and death and the devil. So he could take us from death to life. And how did he do all that? How did he set us free? How did he redeem us? Well, he brought us back at great personal cost to himself. 1 Peter chapter 1, verse 18. For you know that it was not with perishable things such as silver or gold that you were redeemed from the empty way of life handed down to you from your ancestors, but you were redeemed with the precious blood of Christ, a lamb without blemish or defect. How does Jesus take us from emptiness to fullness? How does Jesus redeem us? It was by his death, wasn't it? By his blood. The price paid to buy us out of slavery, to bring us back to the family, it was his own blood. And you know that the kind of redeemer that was commanded in the law, and you know that the kind of redeemer that was modeled for us by Boaz, it was absolutely fulfilled in Jesus. Because Jesus is the redeemer who acted on our behalf for us, his brothers. He's the redeemer who acted exactly as God commanded, one who perfectly was fulfilled God's laws, was perfectly righteous and just. Jesus was the redeemer who didn't balk at the thought of what it might cost him, but redeemed us at immeasurably great cost. Jesus, the Redeemer, who rescued us from a hopeless situation, from being dead in sin. You can't get more hopeless than that. And Jesus, the Redeemer, who brought us out of slavery to sin and death and shame at the cost of his own life. He's the Redeemer who's provided us with the safety and security and refuge you can only find in Yahweh, who has provided us with plenty and blessing and abundance. Jesus is the Redeemer who brought us into his family and provided us with an inheritance we could never have hoped for. Jesus is the Redeemer who has brought us from death to life. So friends, praise be to the Lord that this day he has not left us without a guardian redeemer, for we know his name. His name is Jesus.